As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, that line forms on the right way.
Ha!
Not that Maggie.
Oh, he's back!
Back in town.
Chris McMonagle here with you on this Monday morning. And I put the Chris in there just in case you forgot who you're talking to. I'm back, and I'm with you for the next 4 hours as we take you till 5 a.m. in the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. Oh, a week goes by so fast. I know you missed me. Even if you don't admit it, I know you missed me. And we got a lot to get to, obviously. A lot happened since I was gone. A lot of Juan Soto talk that I missed while I was in Florida. We'll get to the baseball teams. We'll get to the two just mind-numbing decisions that were made by the umpires in Major League Baseball in the Yankee game. What's going on with the Mets right now? Both teams are hot. Mets coming off a sweep. The Yankees coming winning off 3 of 4 with a disastrous. We got to get to the closure situation. We got to get to what Aaron Rodgers said. We got to get to so much. The draft is on Thursday. But to me, as we are coming back, for me, for vacation, and we are getting ready for a big sports run here as our baseball teams are going the NFL draft, but to me, it's still the New York Knicks right now in the playoffs and coming off of game one, and it is game day. 7:30 tonight, New York Knicks, Detroit Pistons, game number two, and I'll tell you this, watching game one, and there's a lot of positives. There's a lot of positives off of game one. Obviously, you start with the 21-0 run where they just ran the Pistons out of the gym, right? I thought Tibbs and his rotation, Shamit's the first one off the bench. He lets Cameron Payne hit those big shots and play, and he keeps Bridges on the bench. I thought the coach had a great game. I thought you saw a lot. I thought, obviously, what you got from whether it be Mitchell Robinson and the way he was defending and the stolen passes, the putback dunk, what you got from Cat and his ability to hit these remarkable shots whenever they needed a basket. It seemed like Cat was there with an off-balance, weird angle shot. There was a lot of good that came out of that game. Jalen Brunson and the slow start, coming back, hitting all their foul shots, the way they play defense in that stretch, the fourth quarter, all of it, a lot of good. But I'll tell you this, what I'm concerned about moving forward, I think tonight's game is a pivotal game in this series, and I'll tell you why. As much as I loved everything that went on in that game number one, and as much as you love that 20-1 run, 20-21-0 run that they went through in the fourth quarter, I hate to say this, but for me, and I think anyone really watching, that was far more of an inexperienced Pistons team collapsing down the stretch of a game. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Watch what happened. The turnovers, the layups, the easy baskets, the mistakes, the wild three-pointers, the ugly shots, the inability to make a stop, the inability to get in. I mean, the easy passes to the basket. I mean, how many layups did Hart have? How many easy passes made under the paint? Like, it was a... Going into the series, so much talk about the two things about playing the Detroit Pistons. Number one, the physicality, right? And how the games previously in the regular season went and the concern about the Knicks and whether or not they're as gritty and as tough as last year's adoration of this team. And is this team ready for the physical nature of a young, upstart Detroit Pistons team and trying to, you know, being able to control Cunningham? And then, of course, the inexperience of the Detroit Pistons. Right? And so much heading into it, especially the couple of days leading into the series, the talk about whether or not if they even struggle against the Detroit Pistons in this series, if it's even a difficult series, if this series goes seven and they obviously don't win in the next round, you could be talking about the coach's job. You could be talking about why is this team struggling in this series? What's the issue? What's the problem? Is this team suited for the playoffs? So much into this series. It's not even that they have to win it. They have to win it convincingly. Otherwise, we're not sure about this Knicks team. And for me, the main storyline, yes, the physical nature, which I thought the Knicks did a good job with. I thought Karl Anthony Towns, for as much as we talk about his softness, for lack of a better term, or, you know, everything that's, you know, plays into his history and our fears of making him the superstar that we chose to trade for, all the concerns when it first happened, every Knicks fan I talk to at any moment, he's struggling or whatever's going on with Kat, it's always, I knew this was him, this is his MO, he's a soft player, wait until the playoffs, we've been hearing that forever. I thought he played really well, backing in, being very physical, hitting off-balance shots, but I thought they handled the physicality. I thought Brunson went right at it. I thought, obviously, to start the game, what you got from OG Anunoby and the offensive outburst, and I talked about that a lot personally, what we saw from OG Anunoby as an offensive player, while Brunson was gone, his tenacity, his aggressiveness, his willingness to take the shot, get to the basket, create on his own, was something I thought was going to be important moving forward into the postseason and can't be lost just because Brunson's come back. And clearly at the beginning of this game when Brunson was missing everything, what was he, 2 for 13 to start the game? OG Anunoby took it upon himself to be an offensive, you know, to run the offense through them. You know it's not going to be, you know where they're not going offensively, and that's obviously they're not going through Bridges. Even though I thought at key times when you need a basket, his efficiency, Bridges' efficiency in his mid-range game is huge for this team. Now, it's not what you want. You wanted more out of him. You wanted him to be a more pivotal point of the offense. You want his three-pointers to fall more often. You want him to be more physical defensively. All the stuff we've complained about Bridges all year. But I'll tell you this, when they need a bucket, his efficiency in the mid-range game is actually really important to their offense. Not to run through, right? You'd hope he would get hot and go on these stretches, and maybe that'll come. Doesn't come in game one, hasn't come a lot this season. But at any moment, you can go to him for a mid-range shot and just get your bucket when you're struggling to make a basket and the possessions get weak and, you know, you're playing isolation ball, which they did at times during the game. But for me, the main story point and the main feel coming out of this game was the Detroit Pistons early on in this game had their way and were playing how they wanted to play and were getting open looks and hitting threes and getting to the basket and being physical and getting to the point where they were dominating the basketball game without Cunningham doing much. Whether it was obviously Beasley hitting his open threes as he scores 20 points in this game and he was 6 of 12 from three-point land, Tim Hardaway hitting long threes early on in the game. The shots stopped falling for them later on. But early on in the game, they had their way with the Knicks. They were doing everything they wanted to do. They were doing all of the stuff we worried about in a series against this Detroit team other than Cunningham going off. And even without that, even with him in some early foul trouble, they were able to get what they wanted and took a lead into the fourth quarter. And then they couldn't deal with it. And once that ball started rolling in the wrong direction, and once the court got tilted, that Knick team just ran all over them. And for me, as great as of a run as it was, and as well as the Knicks played, it was much more about the Detroit Pistons folding. So when I look at game two now, I think this is a pivotal game because I think you're going to find out who the Pistons are. Because I think we know who the Knicks are. And if Brunson's 2-for-13 at the start of the game, you know, that offense gets clunky at times. You know, OG can only do so much. The offense isn't going to run for him through him for long, as great as he played at the start of the game. Karl-Anthony Towns, as important as he is, and as many off-balance shots as he was hitting, I thought Hart played terribly to start the game, came along, and he couldn't hold on to the ball forever. I mean, the whole game, he's every time there's a loose ball, it's out of Hart's hands, out of bounds. He couldn't hold on to the damn thing. And then even late in the game, to trying to put it away, because the Pistons did come back and make it, what, they got it down to 7 points in the fourth quarter at the very end of the game. They weren't getting off, like, they were allowing too many offensive rebounds. There was a lot to this game outside of the 21-0 run that concerns me. And the Pistons folded in the moment. That's the takeaway from the game for me. It wasn't so much that the Knicks ran him out of the gym. It wasn't so much this Knicks team is too much for them. It wasn't so much the Knicks dominated. It was much more of the Pistons couldn't handle the moment. And I was watching it at 2 o'clock in the morning as I'm driving all day. The vacation, everything was going great. As I'm on vacation, the Yankees are winning all these games. They're sweet. The vacation started with me driving into Florida, into Naples, Florida, listening to Rodon blow the game with a ridiculously bad changeup for the home run against the Giants. And then while I'm on vacation and out of the car, everything's going great. And then I'm driving home and I listen to the debacle that was the Yankee game. I got my kids complaining that there's the buffering and everything, trying to watch WrestleMania in the back seat, and I'm not watching the Knick game because I can't do that with a playoff game. It's too much. So I waited till I got home at 1 o'clock in the morning, turned this game on, and as much as I love, I mean, Cameron Payne and everything we saw from him, the bench, the amount of minutes, what we saw from Mitchell Robinson, the Cat and Mitchell Robinson on the court at the same time. But for me, the turning point of this game is that the Pistons folded. So when you go back to Madison Square Garden tonight, game number two, I think we're going to find out whether or not the Pistons are the team that's going to stand up and learn from what happened, or this is just too much for them too early in their process, which is possible. It is possible. I know they like to compare themselves to the Bad Boys, and I understand the youth and the feistiness on this team and the physicality of this team. It is possible that they are just not ready for the moment, but if they are, I do think they provide some issues for this New York Knicks team, and I think we saw it almost all game long. So what Pistons team is here, and when that moment happens again, because this Knicks team is too good not to have it happen. Brunson's too good. Karl-Anthony Towns is too good. They're too experienced. That run is going to happen again. The Knicks are going to go on a 10-2 run. The Knicks are going to go down late in the game. The crowd's going to be the Garden crowd, which was incredible. And what we've seen over the last couple of years has been great. It's what an atmosphere Madison Square Garden has been. That moment is going to happen again. And I'll tell you right now, if the Pistons step up and meet the moment this time, I think they're in for a long series. I truly do. I think this is one of those games that determine whether or not this is going to be a quick, easy series. I still think the Knicks win this series. I've always felt that way. I do feel that way. Nothing in game one makes me feel any different that I think the Knicks are going to lose this series. Don't get me wrong. I think the Knicks are the more talented team. I think the Knicks are the more experienced team, clearly. And I think overall they're the better team and they're going to win this series. But what happens tonight will determine whether or not it's the quick, easy series that you're hoping for and you're getting ready for the Boston Celtics, or it is that grind. It is that long series. It is making you question whether or not this coach is up to it, this team is up to it, whether or not a young upstart Pistons team is going to come into the Garden game two, learn from their mistakes, learn from being beat up, learn from that run, learn from being exposed, get that experience, get that moment out of their system, and come back a tougher team tonight in handling that moment, or is it just too much for them? because I think that's what's going to determine whether or not the Knicks have themselves a real series or whether or not this is going to be a quick 4 or 5 game series at the max, and they'll just be ready for the Boston Celtics in the second round. I think tonight is a pivotal game in this series. The Knicks can afford to lose it. But if similar things happen, if the Knicks, listen, and the Knicks are capable of playing better early in the game, especially Brunson. Brunson was awful to start. Obviously, you get the ankle injury. He doesn't start the second half. He goes and gets his new shoes and all that. And I thought for a long stretch they looked lost offensively. You heard I was watching the MSG version, obviously. So you're listening to them, and you know Clyde is talking about the stagnant offense at times, the inability to move the ball. They're playing so much iso ball with both Cat and Brunson, and it looked stagnant at times. Then even at the end of the game, they couldn't get defensive rebounds to really seal the deal late in the game. A lot of offensive rebounds, a lot of things I didn't like. So many open threes in the first half of this game. That has got to stop. Defensively, I thought they did step up physically. I thought one-on-one, anytime, you know, Cunningham tried to get to the basket, anytime there was a physicality, I thought one-on-one, OG, I don't know, they were all over the place. They were letting them play. It was a physical type game. Like, I thought all of that, Mitch Robinson defending the rim, Karl Anthony Towns defending the rim. Like, I thought they did everything except giving up wide open threes consistently, over-attacking, being overzealous on double teams. They allowed so many open threes, and early on they were falling. And in the second, in the fourth quarter, the second half of this game, but particularly that 21-0 run, the shots weren't falling. They started turning the ball over, which they are fourth in the NBA in turning the ball over. And once that ball started rolling in the Knicks' direction, the Pistons looked lost. And if that's the same team the next time that happens, then I think this is an easy series. But if that doesn't happen, if they've learned from game one, if they bounce back and give this Knicks team a fight and take game two, I think you're looking at a very long 6-7 game series and a fight, because I do think they provide some issues, and I do think that they are tough, they are physical, they can hit their open threes, Beasley and Hardaway particularly. And I think what you're going to find tonight is a deciding factor in the series, who shows up for the Pistons, because I know who's going to show up for the Knicks, and I think they're even going to be better than they were for most of game one. And I think this is one of those series where it's going to come down to who are the Pistons, not who are the Knicks. Because if they are who they were in that fourth quarter, then this is going to be an easy series. But if they are who they were for the first three quarters of this game throughout, I think you could find yourself in a tough battle. So I'm looking forward to game two tonight. We'll get to the baseball. We'll get to Aaron Rodgers. We'll get to the Yankees closer. And make no mistake, Devin Williams is the Yankees closer. Devin Williams should be the Yankees closer. There is absolutely no reason to change that right now. As frustrated as I was pounding the steering wheel, listening to kids complain about not starting the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania in the backseat, as frustrated as I am, as ugly as a loss as that was, I am not ready to change the closer, nor am I worried about one of the best relievers in all of baseball. The same way as I wasn't worried about the right fielder for the New York Mets and whether or not he laments leaving the New York Yankees or whether or not he's happy. All the conversation around Juan Soto. That's the one tweet I put out all week while I was off. I tried to stay away. I tried to stay off the grid. Congratulations to Pat Boyle, the new overnight host over at the network. Obviously, if you're listening to The Fan, you're familiar with Pat over the last couple years. I missed that. Congratulations to him. A lot happened over the last week, and we'll get to everything that did, including comments from the Giants general manager that almost drove me off the road. So we got plenty to get to, a little bit of vacation talk, a caller here, a Met fan caller and listener, who hits me up on Twitter all the time, and it's not always kind. We found a way to get together, hook up. He gave me a recommendation on a restaurant, took care of me, and it makes me feel better about this whole Yankee Met fan thing. Maybe we can all get together. So we got plenty to get to. I'll give you some stories of vacation. We'll get to all the different things that have happened over the week. We'll yell about how that ball is obviously a home run. And the best quote, possibly, of Aaron Boone's entire career as the New York Yankee manager. 888-808-1019. We'll come back, get to every bit of that at 888-808-1019. I am back!
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Metal! 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 The Fan Metal!
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Yeah. All right, 125. McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Back from a week off. Thank you to Al. I think Monday was done by our guy, Gallo Monday, Tuesday, Al the rest of the week. Thank you to them. Thank you, Gallo, to putting together the Muppets. You did right by me, my friend. That is one devilishly handsome Muppet of C-Mac. Looking forward to having some fun with that. As should you, 888-808-1019. We can get into a little bit of WrestleMania as well last night. I loved Saturday. I thought Sunday was all right, and then the finale sucked, I have to admit. I thought the final match between Cody and John Cena was awful. I don't know where The Rock was, why we're watching Travis Scott in the ring. Like, I don't know. I thought it was just, I didn't like anything about it. I didn't like anything about it. But we can get to WrestleMania because there were a lot of good matches, a lot of things happened, and the boys are obsessed with it. And yes, we were watching it in the car. Watching it in the car driving on Saturday, which I drove more this trip just to go to the beach, really, and just hang out in Naples, Florida, and visit my wife's uncle. We went to visit my uncle in Myrtle Beach. Then we visited her uncle in Naples and stayed at a property that he has there in Naples. Didn't really do much. It was not a Disney trip. A lot of people like enjoy Disney. We went to Disney for a day, really didn't even go to a park. Just hung out, went to the boardwalk, saw the fireworks from Epcot, ride the Skyliner. That was about it. But, and we also, I didn't care this time. Typically, we plan it out so meticulously, our trips when we drive down there. Other than leaving at 11 o'clock at night Friday to try to avoid traffic. Other than that, we wanted to sleep in a little bit. We left when we left. We didn't try and get out early. We wanted to enjoy it, wanted it laid back, and we paid for it with traffic. I was in the car, I don't know, 48 hours of the week trip. I was in the car for like two days out of eight that we were gone. Sometimes I don't mind it that much. The kids are actually pretty good. You know, we give them the tablets again. A lot of it they sleep through, or you know, a lot of it last night, WrestleMania, we're listening to the boys are into sports. They're not great listening to the game in the radio. It doesn't last too long, but for at least a little bit. So they're not terrible in the car. We were just in the car so much this trip. Just the ridiculous. Because we had traffic because I didn't try and leave. Normally, we're like, let's get up 4:55 in the morning, on the road by 5:15. Let's get it out there early. This time, we're like, nah, let's sleep. Let's even hit up the pool. We'll leave at like noon, 12:30, and we paid for it. We paid for it, all right. It took forever to get home. Oh, my goodness. 888-808-1019. And a lot happened. And I did take one picture. You know, Met fans are funny. Look, the idea that because I took one picture. I sent out one tweet my entire vacation. I was driving from Naples up to Orlando for one day at Disney on a Thursday morning. And I hadn't listened to the station really all that much. A little bit. I was in the car, but like the boys want to hear music, and I just wanted to get away for a little bit. I think that's understandable. I wanted to get away. I was listening a little bit from here and there, but it happened to be beautiful. I'm listening. I put on BT and Sal, and here's another thing. I very rarely get a chance to listen to BT and Sal because those are my prime sleeping hours. If I'm awake, a typical week when I'm working here, if I'm awake to listen to BT and Sal, I'm going to have a miserable day. I better be asleep during those hours, or I am in trouble. So as much as I try and listen back to everyone at the station, I probably hear BT and Sal the least just because of my hours. But I enjoy the show. I love Sal. I know he thinks I'm calling him out on some takes or whatever, and then out of fun, I got on him on a Batman take that he has. I guess he's doing something with Batman because I heard him reference it on the show as well. but it's a beautiful day in Florida, right? I'm watching the Yankees win. They're sweeping Kansas City. They're taking the first couple of games against Tampa. What was that, Thursday at that point? So maybe they didn't even take the first. It was the sweep of Kansas City. And it's Aaron Judge is leading the world in everything, and Met fans' frustration with Juan Soto. As a Yankee fan and as someone who just wanted to have some fun on a Thursday afternoon, I took a picture of me smiling, listening. Not to get on them for their takes. I thought the show was really good. I enjoyed listening to it. And yeah, the Yankee fan in me that sometimes trolls every once in a while took a fun picture. But the idea that I'm somehow down on Soto, I as a Yankee fan, never once and still to this moment, I wish Juan Soto was a Yankee. And any Yankee fan who tells you different, as much as I enjoy this team, and as much as hopefully Ben Rice is healthy and as great as Ben Rice has been, and Cody Bellinger, hopefully with this home run today or yesterday now, is going to start to snap out of it. Like, and as many singles as Goldschmidt is hitting, and he's hitting about 370, and he's been unbelievable, great defensively the whole bit, and we'll get into all the nonsense that happened today in the Yankee game. I still would rather have Juan Soto on the team. And Juan Soto, while, yes, I think it's fair to be frustrated with him early on in the week, like he hasn't been performing all that well. Now this series, he just had three RBIs yesterday. He's starting to come around. You know what Juan Soto's going to do. You know what Juan Soto's going to do. He might not have the best year of his career. In fact, I don't think he will have as good a year as he had last year with the Yankees because of Aaron Judge, the best hitter in the world. And that was my favorite part, and I wanted to tweet out too. Early on in the week, everyone, and I was, as Fliegelman coined me, the Aaron Karen, as I was defending Aaron Boone and Aaron Judge constantly last 2 weeks ago. I don't know why I had to, because I called him the best hitter in the world, and everybody wants to bring up October and fight with me. The best part of this was even Met fans all week long had to admit that Aaron Judge is the best hitter in the world because Juan Soto said so. Well, I mean, listen, he didn't say anything wrong. Aaron Judge is the best hitter in the world. That was the best part. And I feel like it was an underrated part that not many people were mentioning. And I don't want to retrack. I don't want to come back from vacation and retrack everything that happened over the week. We're on to this next week. But, like, that was my favorite part of the Juan Soto controversy of what he said that day about, you know, they're pitching him different. I don't think it was a an excuse. I don't think it's a big deal. He's going to have a great year because he's a great player, and it doesn't matter who's hitting behind him. And by the way, obviously, Alonso is having an unbelievable start to his season. But for me as a Yankee fan, the best part was even the Met fans who fight back at me about Judge not being the best hitter in the world had to admit it for a whole week and say it over and over again because they had to defend Juan Soto. And Juan Soto called him the best hitter in the world. And so for a full week, every Met fan was forced to call him the best hitter in the world because either that or you have to make a big deal out of it. If you're going to downplay it, you had to admit that he didn't say anything wrong. And to not say that, and to say he didn't say anything wrong, admitted that Aaron Judge is the best hitter on the planet, and you had to say it all week, Met fans. You had to consistently put it out there. He's not wrong. He's not saying anything bad. It is the case. Aaron Judge is the best hitter on the planet. Over and over. It was amazing. It was fantastic. That was the best part. And I feel like, again, I didn't get a chance to listen all the time, but that was like an underrated. I didn't hear enough Yankee fans saying, ha, 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 all of you have to admit it now. Because Juan Soto said it, and if you go against Juan Soto a month in, you're being unfair to the great Juan Soto. We need to applaud him. We need to rise him up. We need to give him standing ovations before every at-bat. And I think that is absolute nonsense. I know it worked for Trey Turner. Juan Soto doesn't need it. It's fine that you do it. Believe me, I hate booing my own players. So bravo, Met fans. And the atmosphere at Citi Field over the last handful of days, one, the attendance and the atmosphere has been incredible for April. And I'm not trying to knock the Mets, but we all know what it's been in April. It just hasn't been this. The excitement for this team, the way they're playing, the addition of Juan Soto. Like right now, that building feels and sounds like almost playoff games are being played against the let's be honest, not a very good, off to a fairly decent start, but not a very good, or at least not expected to be a very good, St. Louis Cardinals team. And right now it's just, and to me, we could talk Juan Soto, we could talk Pete Alonso, we could talk walk-off home runs. It's the pitching. It continues to be the pitching. As you saw Clay Holmes do what he's continued, I've been super, even in some of his lesser starts, I've been super impressed with Clay Holmes. What we saw from Griffin Canning, missing the start because of an illness, coming back, continuing to do what he does. You know, I mean, McGill, if it wasn't for the error from Lindor, you're talking about another really good start from me. Like, it has been. And then even the bullpen, even Budo's been up and down a little bit. I mean, Brazoban blows the save, but you end up winning that game anyway. Like, the pitching for the Mets has been incredible. And now, as Juan Soto wakes up and Lindor is giving you a far superior April to what he gave you last year, hopefully maybe Nimmo is coming out of it a little bit with a great catch and a big hit. McNeil coming back, you're getting more from Acuña and Beatty. As the offense, which you expected to be the driving force of this team, continues to improve and get there, I mean, if the pitching continues like this, you are talking about, without question, one of the best teams in baseball. If they continue to pitch like this, I don't know how you argue it. I don't expect them to continue at this level. It's going to come down a little bit. But right now, if the offense continues to build and Juan Soto ever gets hot, I mean, what's the weakness? Honestly, what's their weakness? 888-808-1019. Let's get to Kevin and Copag. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I met the Karate Kid in ShopRite.
You met the Karate Kid in ShopRite?
Ralph Macchio, baby. I said, my cousin Vinny.
That's what he's known best for, my cousin Vinny. So you met Ralph. I'm back. My first call is I met Ralph Macchio in a grocery store. That's great. What was he doing? Because I went to an unbelievable grocery store in Naples called Seed the Table that I'll tell you guys about. But what was he buying? What was he shopping for? What does the Karate Kid eat?
I don't know. Someone wanted a picture of him. He was like, I'm jet lagged. I guess that means, like, I'm not looking too good. Like,
yeah, maybe. Or, you know, he's tired and he just wants to, you know, buy his ground beef and be left alone. But I don't know.
But the Yankees have nothing to worry about in the AAAL. They should worry, though, about the Dodgers and that team. I don't know what their name is, in Queens.
Yeah, the Mets playing very well. I'm not worried about them. Why would the Yankees be worried about the Mets?
I don't know, but Montas and Minaya haven't thrown a pitch.
Yes.
This whole season. And that ERA, Mike Fliegelman hit on it with Lori Rubinson. This pitching lab is like...
No, it's been incredible. And that's why I don't even... Minaya, yes. Montas, I don't even... Like, it seemed like an injury that sucked. I mean, they did run to give him a big-time contract, and so I have no doubt that they'll be able to turn him into something special. But how much better can he pitch than the guys who are pitching instead of him?
How about Kodai Senga? I mean, he got so much hate last year.
Well, he just didn't pitch, and the playoffs were unfair. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he didn't perform well. They put him in a tough spot. They put him in really tough spots. He wasn't healthy all year. I mean, that's what sucks. That's what concerns you, is he hasn't been healthy. And, like, has he been dominant? No, he's been good enough, and the pitch is devastating. We all know if he gets ahead, he's got a strikeout pitch. I mean, that's for sure. But he's been really good. Everyone's been really good. I mean, name one pitcher on the team that hasn't been good. Like, Young? Buto's been up and down, hope not quite as good as you would hope. Other than that, like, really, all the starters have been good. Like, it's been incredible. The pitching staff has been remarkable, and I'm telling you right now, someone hit me up on Twitter saying one of my guys, or you know, someone who's changed his Twitter account to parody me or have fun with me or whatever. He said I owe an apology to Stearns, and he's not wrong. If the Mets and I never really said Stearns is an idiot, I just questioned his thought process. I'll be the first to admit, I was very skeptical. Now, I guess you can call that criticism. I never killed him necessarily or said he's an idiot, but I was very skeptical. if you could continue to build a pitching staff the way he goes about building it. And listen, to be fair, everyone's, you know, you can knock the Max Fried contract all you want, and the Mets have found some guys to be able to pitch almost as good as Max Fried. I'm pretty damn glad the Yankees gave him an 8-year contract today. Like, without Gerrit Cole and the way Max Fried has been pitching, and the, you know, he went 7 or what ended up being 6 no-hit innings, or 5 no-hit innings with the ridiculous call, and we'll get to all that in a little bit. But how good has Max Fried been? He's been incredible. So there's different ways to do it. You don't have to give guys a ton of money. They're proving it. So I've been very skeptical of the idea. Last year it worked. It was kind of not a throwaway season necessarily, but they didn't, you know, they talked about it in the previous trade deadline. It was going to take a year or two. They were still kind of building, so they didn't want to put money into the rotation. I sort of understood it. They got an incredible performance from the rotation, the second half of the year in particular. And I thought that off of that season, they should invest more in the rotation and not pick up Griffin Canning, who arguably was the worst starter in baseball last year, who made a start every fifth day. Like, that's how bad he was. You could argue that no other pitcher in baseball was allowed to make 30 starts and be worse than Griffin Canning. Like, you're taking a relief pitcher and transitioning him into a starter. You got a guy who in Sanger who didn't pitch last year. You're asking, you know, Montas. And, like, it was just, they didn't invest any real money or get any real quality in the rotation. And I was just skeptical if you could build a rotation that way. And if this continues and they are able to, there's no question. I will never question David Stearns again in how he builds a rotation ever again. You just can't. Until he puts together bad seasons back-to-back or something. But right now, every move they make, everything they're doing, they're having Griffin Canning throw more sliders, like all their decisions and how they're working with their guys and who they picked up on, what they saw and what they thought they could do, they have done. It has been incredible. And if this continues, yeah, I mean, you want to say I owe an apology? I think that's probably a bit strong, but I will say I will never doubt him again. Mark, all the way out in California. What's up, Mark?
What's going on? I actually wanted to say something real quick. Can you believe that Jock Peterson is 3 for 53? I mean, that's just, it's disgusting, man. I'm like, and he was once so feared, right? Yeah, I think he, at one point, yeah, he was like 0 for 36, which is like, man, it's pretty brutal.
Wait, you know? I'm sorry. I didn't hear the name you gave at the beginning. You must have cut out. I didn't hear the name.
Jock Peterson.
Oh, Jock Peterson? Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. Has he been that bad, 0 for his last 36 or so?
He's 0 for 36, 3 for 53. I think he's batting under 50 now. Not even like 100.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst starts ever. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, what he did in Atlanta to win a championship is about all I...
No, there you go. But what about that Aaron Judge 600-foot home run?
Yeah. Today, I don't know how far it went, but...
It's disgusting. Like, I mean, they called that, and then he strikes out, you know, which, I mean, the umpires this year, man, have just been... Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, let's be fair, though. We say it every year. It's not like just this year. We say it all the time that we're on.
Yeah, but they're not going to change anything. They're not going to change anything in the sport.
Well, like, I don't know what there is to change. Let's be totally honest here. The home run is far. The umpires and the home run bother me a hell of a lot less than the hit given in the sixth inning. That is an absolute joke. Like, it's clearly a fair ball. Right. And on the field, the umpire should have been able to get that call right. And then when you review it, it's almost inexcusable. And it led to the greatest sign. And I forgot to tell Fleeks because I got here a little late. I wanted to get the cut. It's in my mind. I don't know why I love it so much. It's the greatest line that Aaron Boone has ever said. I don't know why I feel this way. But I think it's, I don't know why, the way he said it, they're like, you know, Meredith asked him, so you went back to the clubhouse right after the game. So give me the, I guess we have the line here. This is quite possibly, this is my favorite line. And this is coming from an Aaron Boone defender who constantly defends, I got on him for some of his nonsense about Carlos Rodon. But for the most part, I think it's so overblown that people get upset about his lines and stuff. And, you know, it's right there in front of us has become an issue for a lot of fans, which is 100% accurate when he says it. even though it gets tiresome, I agree. This line right here from Aaron Boone is my favorite line. Just something about the way he worded it, something about the way he said it. This is my favorite line from Aaron Boone in the history of his career as the Yankee manager.
I don't. The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. So it's a home run, and
that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Didn't go our way though.
So she says you went down and looked at the video. Were you looking at the home run? He said yes. And she's like, "What do you think?" The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. I don't know why I love that so much, but I do. The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. I love that. Now, thankfully, it didn't cost the Yankees anything. But
you know what that sounds like? That's a Mike Tomlin line.
That is a kind of a Mike Tomlin thing to say. The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. I quoted it and said, Aaron Shakespeare Boone. Like, it sounded very, like, I don't know if it's proper English, but there's like a vibe to it. I don't know what it is, but I love it. The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. It was a terrible call. The scorekeeper, which the official scorer, I have a far greater issue with. Like, if you didn't see it, obviously Max Fried pitching a gem for the Yankees who win the game 4-0. He's throwing a no-hitter, right? In the sixth inning, there is a ground ball from this new young kid that they just called up, Simpson, who is apparently the fastest player now in Major League Baseball. And he has stolen like 104 bases and 107 innings or something crazy, 107 plate appearances or on base, whatever. You know, he's apparently really fast, and he beat out a single to the ground ball to the first baseman in the minor leagues. He's doing things that are, you know, breathtaking with his speed. Even though Max Fried earlier in the game, you want to talk about athlete, watch Max Fried, and this is why I have no problem giving him the money. Look at Max Fried play the position too. The way he's able to get off the bag, feel the ball, and then beat this kid to the bag the way he did. That's a lefty falling off the mound. Like, and Max the other way towards third base and still beats the fastest guy in baseball to the base earlier in the game. But if you didn't see the play, it's in the sixth inning. And here's the issue I have with it. It's a hit. I completely agree with the ultimate call. And that's what's so frustrating, because it takes a lot to annoy me when I think you're right. Like, you have to be a complete imbecile to piss me off when I think you're actually correct. But to me, the official scorer eventually does get it right. It is a base hit. It's a ground ball to the first baseman. And there is no way they're making the play. Even if it's fielded perfectly, he is going to beat the ground ball. He is going to beat Max Fried to the bag. It is going to be a single. But it's a ground ball to Goldschmidt. He boots it. They rule it an error. And the initial call is wrong in my mind. That should be a base hit. But it's called an error on the field. He continues the sixth. He gets through the seventh. In between the seventh and eighth inning, the official scorer changes that play from an error to a single. This guy is throwing a no-hitter. This is history. You cannot. I don't care. You don't even review it until there's another hit. Like, that's what bothers me the most. I'm not even thinking about changing an error to a single. I'm not going over it. I'm not looking at it again. I made the call in the moment. I have to live with it because he's throwing a no-hitter. If he had given up four hits in the game, then that's fine. But he's throwing a no-hitter. What if he got through the rest of the game and didn't give up another hit? You cannot, in that moment, revisit that play until another hit is made. Thankfully, or, you know, depending on how you feel about it as a Yankee fan, ultimately they won the game, and it wasn't going to be a no-hitter anyway, so I don't care. But he gives up a single to the leadoff man in the eighth. A legit line drive up the middle. But that is mind-numbing to me. Because even though he's right, he's wrong. You cannot change that then. And I don't know if that sounds hypocritical, because ultimately I agree with the call. It's a base hit. It should have been called a base hit right off the bat. It's a base hit. But you cannot change it mid-in. You cannot take... You are the official scorer of the game. You are not in the game. You are not playing in the game. You're not even a coach in the game. You should have no impact in that game. And unfortunately for you, this is now history. Possibility in the making. I understand he didn't do it with two outs in the ninth. It's still, obviously, he didn't get the no-hitter anyway. But that is not the time to make that call. That is outrageous behavior. Outrageous. And he's going to lean on the idea that he's going to stand on the call is right. And he's not wrong. The call is correct. It was a base hit. But you can't do it in that moment. And then you get the foul ball, which, yeah, I don't know how in the world when, forget even the angle. Forget even the angle of watching the ball go over. You can play the obvious game of looking at where in the tree the ball hits. Forget watching the actual ball during the flight. You can see where the ball goes into the trees. They do have a high angle shot of the field, and you can see where that tree stands as far as fair or foul. That's the easiest way. Forget that it's in a minor league ballpark. Forget that the foul pole isn't tall enough. Forget they might not have the perfect angle. Forget all of it. I don't even need the trajectory of the ball in flight. It's clear as day where in the tree it goes into the tree. They have the high angle shot that they showed us, and you can clearly see where that tree is in respect to the foul pole and fair or foul. It's clear as day. It is without question a home run. It's without question. And it's not even particularly all that close. It's a home run. And all I can say is the audacity that the call stands is remarkable. That is... He's 100%. You could not have said it better. You couldn't have written it better. I mean, that's it. It is absolutely perfect. The audacity of the call standing is remarkable. It is.
The audacity of the call standing is remarkable.
I don't know what it is. That's just perfect. Like, it's one of those things where I'm not sure it's, like, correct English. I don't know. I think it is. But there's something just off enough about it where it feels perfect. It's perfect wording. I love, Aaron, that, bravo. That is just the best way to, the audacity of the call standing is remarkable. 888-808-1019. But, like, you could clearly see it's... And then the official scorer is a idiot. I'm sorry. There's no other way to put it. You can't insert yourself into that moment. That's the main thing. You cannot insert yourself into changing what could be Major League Baseball history. That could be the crowning achievement of Max Fried's, you know, regular season personal achievement. Like, that could be something he lives with the rest of his life. You can't take that away from him after you, like, allowed him to think that was it. I don't know if Max Fried's thrown a no-hitter prior in his career.
I don't think so. What would be worse, like, if that goes on as it was, say he does throw a no-hitter, and then they protested after the game, the Rays, to change that to a hit, and they take it away?
Oh, yeah. No, that would be worse. But, I mean, that would be...
Or would MLB just say, you know what, at this point, yeah, you guys are right, but we can't do it.
Right. I mean,
they call the home run a foul ball, so maybe they think they can do whatever they want.
No, of course. It would be worse if it happened after he already did it. Like, it would be worse if they celebrated it, everyone went on the field, and then they decided to change it after that, yes. But still, I mean, and we've seen it before. I think, what was the one? Didn't R.A. Dickey throw a one-hitter that it was called a base hit, and then in the seventh or eighth inning, they ruled it to an out? He was throwing a one-hitter. And then he gave up a single in, like, the first inning. And then in, like, the seventh inning, they changed it to an error, and suddenly he had a no-hitter?
Yeah, when he had the back, I think it was when he might have had the back-to-back one-hitters. Yeah. This one was in Tampa at the Trop.
Right, I vaguely remember that. Now, that's almost as bad. I mean, because he wasn't pitching with the expectation.
It ended up extending. He had like a scoreless streak.
Right.
So it ended up extending that because they changed it to an unearned run that
scored. Oh, okay. I got you. But like that's almost as – I would be just as annoyed if I was like the fan of the other team because in that situation, R.A. Dickey is not pitching with the pressure of throwing a no-hitter. He's already given up a hit. In his mind, he's not pitching with that pressure of, oh, I got to be perfect. He's already given up the hit. But that's not as – I mean, I still wouldn't do that. Like in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, now all of a sudden I'm going to change what has been a one-hitter all game into a no-hitter? These are you know, magical moments. I know it's been done – somewhat certainly, and we've seen it from guys like, you know, obviously Herman or, you know, Dallas Braden or whoever else, you know. Doesn't have to be Mark Heilman. Like, it doesn't have to be the greatest player in the world to throw in a no-hitter. But these are, this is the history of baseball. You do not interject yourself into the moment and the history of the game. It's absolutely it's a mind-numbing decision. It's letter of the law. I want to be right. Let me revalue that. Let me look back at this. Is he going to beat him the first bite? You should have done that within 30 seconds of making the call. And then if he gives up a hit and you want to revisit it, fine. But you can't. Major League Baseball sometimes does the dumbest things. And I'm telling you right now, the idea that we went to break, they went to a commercial break, and every Yankee fan and everybody watching that game is expecting Max Fried to come out for the eighth, six outs away from a no-hitter. And they come back, and Michael Kay is explaining why there's one hit on the board is unbelievably asinine. It's unbelievably asinine. It takes away all of the excitement of that game. Now it's just a 4-0 game that you hope the Yankees don't blow back-to-back days. But, like, I thought I was watching something special. It's Easter Sunday. I took time away from playing wiffle ball with the kids. To be fair, I was with them all week on vacation. I could have, it's all right to spend 5 minutes inside. But, like, I was playing wiffle ball with the kids, checked my phone, and I was like, wow, it's the seventh inning, starting a no-hitter. And I was like, they didn't care. I was like, come on, now they wanted to play. So they played with Uncle Jimmy. I was like, I got to go inside and watch to see if the guy's throwing a no-hitter. I took time away from my kids, and you might have taken, like, it's Easter Sunday, I'm supposed to be with family, and I went inside because I got to watch a no-hitter. And you're going to take that away in between innings? Thank God he gave up a base hit, because this would have been a huge debacle for Major League Baseball. Huge.
And so just heads up, I got clarity on the Dickey thing. Yes. It was in the middle. He did have a still scoreless streak. This was earlier in the same game when he extended it. There was a ground ball to David Wright in the first inning that was ruled a hit.
Right.
They wanted it overturned. Then he gave up another an unearned run in the ninth inning on another David Wright error that they did call an error at the time, but the Mets wanted this retroactively changed to a no-hitter, and MLB did not do that.
Right.
But it kept his scoreless streak alive.
I remember the conversation about whether or not you can change into a no-hitter and whether or not you would have felt the same way about it. Because I got to be totally honest with you. Like, I wouldn't.
Right, because there was no celebration.
Not only
no pomp and circumstance.
Not even that. There's no pressure of the no-hitter. Like, part of pitching a no-hitter is dealing with the pressure of I'm pitching a no-hitter.
If I've given up a hit in the first. This wasn't in the ninth inning. This was in the first inning.
Correct. So all game long, he is not pitching with the idea of I have to be perfect, I'm throwing a no-hitter. Like, you know, we talk about it. You don't go near the pitcher. He sits by himself in the dugout. You know, he's got to come out. He's got to get ready for it. He's got to get up for it. Like, the idea that the whole game he doesn't pitch under that pressure at all would take away from me whether or not he threw a no-hitter.
We just would have had another game in a two-week span where Yankee fans and the rest of the world were trying to discredit a Mets no-hitter. This is June 13th, 2012. A couple weeks after.
Yeah, that's right. Same season. Oh, wow.
Yeah, Santana was June 1st.
See, and we all know that ball was foul, fair, but no one cares. That's a no-hitter. Anyone who says different, I mean, listen, bad calls happen all the time. You want to go through every no-hitter in baseball? I promise you, there's terrible calls in a bunch of no-hitters.
Oh, how many perfect games of no-hitters would we have to take away? Well, we could give Galarraga his in 2010.
Correct. Yeah.
The 1985 World Series, the results would change.
Yep. No, there's a lot of them.
And Judge would have 8 home runs.
and Judge would have 8 home runs, which bothers me a little bit. When he hits 61 again, we're going to be annoyed. Or 62 again, we're going to be annoyed. But no, I mean, the audacity of the call standing is remarkable.